practice as part of Israel's agreement with me. This bread will always belong to Aaron and his family. It is very holy because it was offered to me, and it must be eaten in a holy place. Punishment for cursing the Lord. Shelomith, the daughter of Dibri, from the tribe of Dan, had married an Egyptian, and they had a son. One day their son got into a fight with an Israelite man in camp and cursed the name of the Lord. So the young man was dragged off to Moses, who had him guarded while everyone waited for the Lord to tell them what to do. Finally, the Lord said to Moses, "This man has cursed me. Take him outside the camp and have the witnesses lay their hands on his head. Then command the whole community of Israel to stone him to death, and warn the others that everyone else who curses me will die in the same way, whether they are Israelites by birth or foreigners living among you. Death is also the penalty for murder, but the killing of an animal that belongs to someone else requires only that the animal be replaced. Personal injuries to others must be dealt with in keeping with the crime. A broken bone for a broken bone, an eye for an eye, or a tooth for a tooth. It's possible to pay the owner for an animal that has been killed, but death is the penalty for murder. I am the Lord, your God, and I demand equal justice, both for you Israelites and for those foreigners who live among you." When Moses finished speaking, the people did what the Lord had told Moses, and they stoned to death the man who had cursed the Lord.
The Seventh Year, Chapter 25. When Moses was on Mount Sinai, the Lord told him to say to the community of Israel, "After you enter the land that I am giving you, it must be allowed to rest 1 year out of every seven. You may raise grain and grapes for 6 years, but the seventh year you must let your fields and vineyards rest in honor of me, your Lord. This is to be a time of complete rest for your fields and vineyards, so don't harvest anything they produce. However, you and your slaves and your hired workers, as well as any domestic or wild animals, may eat whatever grows on its own. The Year of Celebration. The Lord said to his people, "Once every 49 years, on the 10th day of the 7th month, which is also the great day of forgiveness, trumpets are to be blown everywhere in the land. This 50th year is sacred. It is a time of freedom and of celebration when everyone will receive back their original property and slaves will return home to their families. This is a year of complete celebration, so don't plant any seed or harvest what your fields or vineyards produce. In this time of sacred celebration, you may eat only what grows on its own. During this year, all property must go back to its original owner. So when you buy or sell farmland, the price is to be determined by the number of crops it can produce before the next year of celebration. Don't try to cheat. If it is a long time before the next year of celebration, the price will be higher, because what is really being sold are the crops that the land can produce. I am the Lord your God, so obey me and don't cheat anyone. If you obey my laws and teachings, you will live safely in the land and enjoy its abundant crops. Don't ever worry about what you will eat during the seventh year when you are forbidden to plant or harvest. I will see to it that you harvest enough in the sixth year to last for 3 years. In the eighth year, you will live on what you harvested in the sixth year, but in the ninth year, you will eat what you plant and harvest in the eighth year. No land may be permanently bought or sold. It all belongs to me. It isn't your land, and you only live there for a little while. When property is being sold, the original owner must be given the first chance to buy it. If any of you Israelites become so poor that you are forced to sell your property, your closest relative must buy it back if that relative has the money. Later, if you can afford to buy it, you must pay enough to make up for what the present owner will lose on it before the next year of celebration, when the property would become yours again. But if you don't have the money to pay the present owner a fair price, you will have to wait until the year of celebration, when the property will once again become yours. If you sell a house in a walled city, you have only 1 year in which to buy it back. If you don't buy it back before that year is up, it becomes the permanent property of the one who bought it, and it will not be returned to you in the year of celebration. But a house out in a village may be bought back at any time, just like a field, and it must be returned to its original owner in the year of celebration. If any Levites own houses inside a walled city, they will always have the right to buy them back. And any houses that they do not buy back will be returned to them in the year of celebration, because these homes are their permanent property among the people of Israel. No pasture land owned by the Levi tribe can ever be sold. It is their permanent possession. Help for the poor. The Lord said, "If any of your people become poor and unable to support themselves, you must help them just as you are supposed to help foreigners who live among you. Don't take advantage of them by charging any kind of interest or selling them food for profit. Instead, honor me by letting them stay where they now live. Remember, I am the Lord your God. I rescued you from Egypt and gave you the land of Canaan so that I would be your God. Suppose some of your people become so poor that they have to sell themselves and become your slaves. Then you must treat them as servants rather than as slaves. And in the year of celebration, they are to be set free, so they and their children may return home to their families and property. I brought them out of Egypt to be my servants, not to be sold as slaves. So obey me, and don't be cruel to the poor. If you want slaves, buy them from other nations or from the foreigners who live in your own country, and make them your property. You can own them and even leave them to your children when you die, but do not make slaves of your own people or be cruel to them. Even if some of you Israelites become so much in debt that you must sell yourselves to foreigners in your country, you still have the right to be set free by a relative, such as a brother or uncle or cousin or some other family member. In fact, if you ever get enough money, you may buy your own freedom by paying your owner for the number of years you would still be a slave before the next year of celebration. The longer the time until then, the more you will have to pay. And even while you are the slaves of foreigners in your own country, your people must make sure that you are not mistreated. If you cannot gain your freedom in any of these ways, both you and your children will still be set free in the year of celebration. People of Israel, I am the Lord your God, and I brought you out of Egypt to be my own servants." Blessings for obeying the Lord. The Lord said, chapter 26, "I am the Lord your God, so don't make or worship any sort of idols or images. Respect the Sabbath and honor the place where I am worshipped, because I am the Lord. Faithfully obey my laws, and I will send rain to make your crops grow and your trees produce fruit. Your harvest of grain and grapes will be so abundant that you won't know what to do with it all. You will eat and be satisfied, and you will live in safety. I will bless your country with peace, and you will rest without fear. I will wipe out the dangerous animals and protect you from enemy attacks. You will chase and destroy your enemies, even if there are only 5 of you and 100 of them, or only 100 of you and 10,000 of them. I will treat you with such kindness that your nation will grow strong, and I will also keep my promises to you. Your barns will overflow with grain each year. I will live among you, and never again look on you with disgust. I will walk with you, I will be your God, and you will be my people. I am the Lord your God, and I rescued you from Egypt so that you would never again be slaves. I have set you free. Now, walk with your heads held high." Punishment for disobeying the Lord. The Lord said, "If you disobey me and my laws, and if you break our agreement, I will punish you terribly, and you will be ruined. You will be struck with incurable diseases, and with fever that leads to blindness and depression. Your enemies will eat the crops you plant, and I will turn from you and let you be destroyed by your attackers. You will even run at the very rumor of attack. Then, if you still refuse to obey me, I will punish you 7 times for each of your sins, until your pride is completely crushed. I will hold back the rain, so the sky above you will be like iron, and the ground beneath your feet will be like copper. All of your hard work will be for nothing, and there will be no harvest of grain or fruit. If you keep rebelling against me, I'll punish you 7 times worse, just as your sins deserve. I'll send wild animals to attack you, and they will gobble down your children and livestock. So few of you will be left that your roads will be deserted. If you remain my enemies after this, I'll remain your enemy and punish you even worse. War will break out because you broke our agreement, and if you escape to your walled cities, I'll punish you with horrible diseases and you will be captured by your enemies. You will have such a shortage of bread that 10 women will be able to bake their bread in the same oven. Each of you will get only a few crumbs, and you will go hungry. Then, if you don't stop rebelling, I'll really get furious and punish you terribly for your sins. In fact, you will be so desperate for food that you will eat your own children. I'll destroy your shrines and tear down your incense altars, leaving your dead bodies piled on top of your idols. And you will be disgusting to me. I'll wipe out your towns and your places of worship, and will no longer be pleased with the smell of your sacrifices. Your land will become so desolate that even your enemies who settle there will be shocked when they see it. After I destroy your towns and ruin your land with war, I'll scatter you among the nations. While you are prisoners in foreign lands, your own land will enjoy years of rest and refreshment, as it should have done each 7th year when you lived there. In the land of your enemies, you will tremble at the rustle of a leaf, as though it were a sword, and you will become so weak that you will stumble and fall over each other, even when no one is chasing you. Many of you will die in foreign lands, and others of you will waste away in sorrow as the result of your sins and the sins of your ancestors. Then suppose you realize that I turned against you and brought you to the land of your enemies because both you and your ancestors had stubbornly sinned against me. If you humbly confess what you have done and start living right, I'll keep the promise I made to your ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I will bless your land and let it rest during the time that you are in a foreign country, paying for your rebellion against me and my laws. No matter what you have done, I am still the Lord your God, and I will never completely reject you or become absolutely disgusted with you there in the land of your enemies. While nations watched, I rescued your ancestors from Egypt so that I would be their God. Yes, I am your Lord, and I will never forget our agreement. Moses was on Mount Sinai when the Lord gave him these laws and teachings for the people of Israel. Making Promises to the Lord. Chapter 27. The Lord told Moses to say to the community of Israel, "If you ever want to free someone who has been promised to me, you may do so by paying the following amounts, weighed according to the official standards. 50 pieces of silver for men, ages 20 to 60, and 30 pieces for women. 20 pieces of silver for young men, ages 5 to 20, and 10 pieces for young women. 15 pieces of silver for men, ages 60 and above, and 10 pieces for women. 5 pieces of silver for boys, ages 1 month to 5 years, and 3 pieces for girls. If you have promised to give someone to me and can't afford to pay the full amount for that person's release, you will be taken to a priest, and he will decide how much you can afford. If you promise to sacrifice an animal to me, it becomes holy, and there is no way you can set it free. If you try to substitute any other animal, no matter how good, for the one you promised, they will both become holy and must be sacrificed. Donkeys are unfit for sacrifice, so if you promise me a donkey, you must bring it to the priest and let him determine its value. But if you want to buy it back, you must pay an additional 20%. If you promise a house to me, a priest will set the price, whatever the condition of the house. But if you decide to buy it back, you must pay an additional 20%. If you promise part of your family's land to me, its value must be determined by the bushels of seed needed to plant the land, and the rate will be 10 pieces of silver for every bushel of seed. If this promise is made in the year of celebration, the land will be valued at the full price. But any time after that, the price will be figured according to the number of years before the next year of celebration. If you decide to buy back the land, you must pay the price plus an additional 20%, but you cannot buy it back once someone else has bought it. When the year of celebration comes, the land becomes holy because it belongs to me, and it will be given to the priests. If you promise me a field that you have bought, its value will be decided by a priest according to the number of years before the next year of celebration, and the money you pay will be mine. However, on the next year of celebration, the land will go back to the family of its original owner. Every price will be set by the official standards. Various offerings. The Lord said, "All firstborn animals of your flocks and herds are already mine, and so you cannot promise any of them to me. If you promise me a donkey, you may buy it back by adding an additional 20% to its value. If you don't buy it back, it can be sold to someone else for whatever a priest has said it is worth. Anything that you completely dedicate to me must be completely destroyed. It cannot be bought back or sold. Every person, animal, and piece of property that you dedicate completely is only for me. In fact, any humans who have been promised to me in this way must be put to death. 10% of everything you harvest is holy and belongs to me, whether it grows in your fields or on your fruit trees. If you want to buy back this part of your harvest, you may do so by paying what it is worth plus an additional 20%. When you count your flocks and herds, 1 out of 10 of every newborn animal is holy and belongs to me, no matter how good or bad it is. If you substitute one animal for another, both of them become holy, and neither can be bought back." Moses was on Mount Sinai when the Lord gave him these laws for the people of Israel.
You have been listening to The Holy Bible, The Book of Leviticus, narrated by George Guidel, Suzanne Torin, and Jonathan Davis. The Book of Numbers, narrated by Suzanne Torin.
Numbers. About this book. The Book of Numbers continues the history of the people of Israel after they escaped from Egypt, and it tells what happened during the 40 years when the Israelites lived in the desert on their journey from Mount Sinai to Canaan. The book is named Numbers because it begins with Moses counting the Israelites to find out the number of people in each of Israel's 12 tribes. Numbers can be divided into 3 parts. In the first part, the Lord has Moses count the people, and then he gives Moses instructions for setting up Israel's camp and for assigning the Levites their duties. This part ends with everyone celebrating Passover and offering sacrifices to the Lord. The second part includes events that happened while the Israelites were on their way to Moab, a nation living east of the Jordan River. This was a very difficult journey through the desert, and the people often complained and even rebelled against Moses and against God. The Israelites refused to enter Canaan after hearing about the nations that lived there, and so the Lord punished the Israelites by making them remain in the desert for 40 years. This part of Numbers ends with the people camped in Moab near Mount Pisgah. The third part of the book begins with the Israelites conquering the land just east of the Jordan River, from the border with Moab in the south to Lake Galilee in the north. Then the king of Moab hired the foreign prophet Balaam to curse the people of Israel. But the Lord told Balaam to bless the Israelites, and Balaam obeyed. The Israelites prepared to cross the Jordan River and conquer the land of Canaan, although some of the people decided to settle east of the Jordan River. The Israelites were counted a second time. Then the Lord appointed Joshua to be Israel's next leader and chose other leaders to help Joshua divide the land among the tribes. The book concludes with the Lord giving the Israelites more laws. The people of Israel are counted. Chapter 1. The people of Israel had left Egypt and were living in the Sinai Desert. Then, on the first day of the second month of the second year, Moses was in the sacred tent when the Lord said, "I want you and Aaron to find out how many people are in each of Israel's clans and families, and make a list of all the men 20 years and older who are able to fight in battle. The following 12 family leaders, one from each tribe, will help you. Eliezer, son of Shedeur, from Reuben. Shelumiel, son of Zurishaddai, from Simeon. Nashon, son of Aminadab, from Judah. Nathanael, son of Zuar, from Issachar. Eliab, son of Helon, from Zebulun. Elishama, son of Ammihud, from Ephraim. Gamaliel, son of Pedazur, from Manasseh. Abidan, son of Gideoni, from Benjamin. Ahiezer, son of Amishaddai, from Dan. Pagiel, son of Ochran, from Asher. Eliasaph, son of Juel, from Gad. And Ahira, son of Enan, from Naphtali. Moses and Aaron, together with these 12 tribal leaders, called together the people that same day. They were counted according to their clans and families. Then Moses and the others listed the names of the men 20 years and older, just as the Lord had commanded. The number of men from each tribe who were at least 20 years old and strong enough to fight in Israel's army was as follows. 46,500 from Reuben, the oldest son of Jacob. 59,300 from Simeon. 45,650 from Gad. 74,600 from Judah. 54,400 from Issachar. 57,400 from Zebulun. 40,500 from Ephraim. 32,200 from Manasseh. 35,400 from Benjamin. 62,700 from Dan. 41,500 from Asher. 53,400 from Naphtali. The total number of men registered by Moses, Aaron, and the 12 leaders was 603,550. But those from the Levi tribe were not included, because the Lord had said to Moses, "When you count the Israelites, do not include those from the Levi tribe. Instead, give them the job of caring for the sacred tent, its furnishings, and the objects used for worship. They will camp around the tent, and whenever you move, they will take it down, carry it to the new camp, and set it up again. Anyone else who tries to go near it must be put to death." The rest of the Israelites will camp in their own groups and under their own banners. But the Levites will camp around the sacred tent to make sure that no one goes near it and makes me furious with the Israelites. The people of Israel did everything the Lord had commanded. Instructions for setting up Israel's camp. Chapter 2. The Lord told Moses and Aaron how the Israelites should arrange their camp. Each tribe must set up camp under its own banner and under the flags of its ancestral families. These camps will be arranged around the sacred tent, but not close to it. Judah and the tribes that march with it must set up camp on the east side of the sacred tent under their own banner. The 74,600 troops of the tribe of Judah will be arranged by divisions and led by Nahshon, son of Amminadab. On one side of Judah will be the tribe of Issachar, with Nethanel, son of Zuar, as the leader of its 54,400 troops. On the other side will be the tribe of Zebulun, with Eliab, son of Helon, as the leader of its 57,400 troops. These 186,400 troops will march into battle first. Reuben and the tribes that march with it must set up camp on the south side of the sacred tent, under their own banner. The 46,500 troops of the tribe of Reuben will be arranged by divisions and led by Eliezer, son of Shedeur. On one side of Reuben will be the tribe of Simeon, with Shelumiel, son of Zurishaddai, as the leader of its 59,300 troops. On the other side will be the tribe of Gad, with Eliasaph, son of Deuel, as the leader of its 45,650 troops. These 151,450 troops will march into battle second. Marching behind Reuben will be the Levites, arranged in groups just as they are camped. They will carry the sacred tent and their own banners. Ephraim and the tribes that march with it must set up camp on the west side of the sacred tent under their own banner. The 40,500 troops of the tribe of Ephraim will be arranged by divisions and led by Elishama, son of Ammihud. On one side of Ephraim will be the tribe of Manasseh, with Gamaliel, son of Pedazur, as the leader of its 32,200 troops. On the other side will be the tribe of Benjamin, with Abidan, son of Gideoni, as the leader of its 35,400 troops. These 108,100 troops will march into battle third. Dan and the tribes that march with it must set up camp on the north side of the sacred tent under their own banner. The 62,700 troops of the tribe of Dan will be arranged by divisions and led by Ahiezer, son of Amishaddai. On one side of Dan will be the tribe of Asher, with Pagiel, son of Ochran, as the leader of its 41,500 troops. On the other side will be the tribe of Naphtali, with Ahira, son of Enan, as the leader of its 53,400 troops. These 157,600 troops will march into battle last. So all the Israelites in the camp were counted according to their ancestral families. The troops were arranged by divisions and totaled 603,550. The only Israelites not included were the Levites, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. Israel did everything the Lord had told Moses. They arranged their camp according to clans and families, with each tribe under its own banner. And that was the order by which they marched into battle. The Sons of Aaron. Chapter 3. When the Lord talked with Moses on Mount Sinai, Aaron's four sons, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar, were the ones to be ordained as priests. But the Lord killed Nadab and Abihu in the Sinai desert when they used fire that was unacceptable in their offering to the Lord. And because Nadab and Abihu had no sons, only Eleazar and Ithamar served as priests with their father Aaron. The duties of the Levites. The Lord said to Moses, "Assign the Levi tribe to Aaron the priest. They will be his assistants and will work at the sacred tent for him and for all the Israelites. The Levites will serve the community by being responsible for the furnishings of the tent. They are assigned to help Aaron and his sons, who have been appointed to be priests. Anyone else who tries to perform the duties of a priest must be put to death. Moses, I have chosen these Levites from all Israel, and they will belong to me in a special way. When I killed the firstborn sons of the Egyptians, I decided that the firstborn sons in every Israelite family and the firstborn males of their flocks and herds would be mine. But now, I accept these Levites in place of the firstborn sons of the Israelites." The Levites are counted. In the Sinai Desert, the Lord said to Moses, "Now I want you to count the men and boys in the Levi tribe by families and by clans. Include everyone at least a month old." So Moses obeyed and counted them. Levi's three sons, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, had become the heads of their own clans. Gershon's sons were Libni and Shimei. Kohath's sons were Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Uzziel. And Merari's sons were Mahli and Mushi. These were the sons and grandsons of Levi, and they had become the leaders of the Levite clans. The two Gershon clans were the Libnites and Shimeites, and they had 7,500 men and boys at least 1 month old. The Gershonites were to camp on the west side of the sacred tent, under the leadership of Eliasaph, son of Lael. Their duties at the tent included taking care of the tent itself, along with its outer covering, the curtain for the entrance, the curtains hanging inside the courtyard around the tent, as well as the curtain and ropes for the entrance to the courtyard and its altar. The Gershonites were responsible for setting these things up and taking them down. The four Kohath clans were the Amramites, Izharites, Hebronites, and the Uzzielites, and they had 8,600 men and boys at least 1 month old. The Kohathites were to camp on the south side of the sacred tent, under the leadership of Elizaphan, son of Uzziel. Their duties at the tent included taking care of the sacred chest, the table for the sacred bread, the lampstand, the altars, the objects used for worship, and the curtain in front of the most holy place. The Kohathites were responsible for setting these things up and taking them down. Eleazar, son of Aaron, was the head of the Levite leaders, and he made sure that the work at the sacred tent was done. The two Merari clans were the Mahlites and the Mushites, and they had 6,200 men and boys at least 1 month old. The Merarites were to camp on the north side of the sacred tent, under the leadership of Zuriel, son of Abihail. Their duties included taking care of the tent frames and the pieces that held the tent up, the bars, the posts, the stands, and its other equipment. They were also in charge of the posts that supported the courtyard, as well as their stands, tent pegs, and ropes. The Merari clans were responsible for setting these things up and taking them down. Moses, Aaron, and his sons were to camp in front of the sacred tent on the east side, and to make sure that the Israelites worshipped in the proper way. Anyone else who tried to do the work of Moses and Aaron was to be put to death. So Moses and Aaron obeyed the Lord and counted the Levites by their clans. The total number of Levites at least 1 month old was 22,000. The Levites are accepted as substitutes for the firstborn sons. The Lord said to Moses, "Make a list and count the firstborn sons at least 1 month old in each of the Israelite families. They belong to me, but I will accept the Levites as substitutes for them, and I will accept the Levites' livestock as substitutes for the Israelites' firstborn livestock." Moses obeyed the Lord and counted the firstborn sons. There were 22,273 of them. Then the Lord said, "The Levites will belong to me and will take the place of the firstborn sons. Their livestock will take the place of the Israelites' firstborn livestock. But since there are more firstborn sons than Levites, the extra 273 men and boys must be bought back from me. For each one, you are to collect 5 pieces of silver, weighed according to the official standards. This money must then be given to Aaron and his sons." Moses collected the silver from the extra 273 firstborn men and boys, and it amounted to 1,365 pieces of silver, weighed according to the official standards. Then he gave it to Aaron and his sons, just as the Lord had commanded. The duties of the Kohathite clans. Chapter 4. The Lord told Moses and Aaron, "Find out how many men between the ages of 30 and 50 are in the 4 Levite clans of Kohath. Count only those who are able to work at the sacred tent. The Kohathites will be responsible for carrying the sacred objects used in worship at the sacred tent. When the Israelites are ready to move their camp, Aaron and his sons will enter the tent and take down the curtain that separates the sacred chest from the rest of the tent. They will cover the chest with this curtain, and then with a piece of fine leather, and cover it all with a solid blue cloth. After this, they will put the carrying poles in place. Next, Aaron and his sons will use another blue cloth to cover the table for the sacred bread. On the cloth they will place the dishes, the bowls for incense, the cups, the jugs for wine, as well as the bread itself. They are to cover all of this with a bright red cloth, and then with a piece of fine leather, before putting the carrying poles in place. With another blue cloth they will cover the lampstand, along with the lamps, the lamp snuffers, the fire pans, and the jars of oil for the lamps. All of this will then be covered with a piece of fine leather and placed on a carrying frame. The gold incense altar is to be covered with a blue cloth and then with a piece of fine leather before its carrying poles are put in place. Next, Aaron and his sons will take blue cloth and wrap all the objects used in worship at the sacred tent. These will need to be covered with a piece of fine leather, then placed on a carrying frame. They are to remove the ashes from the bronze altar and cover it with a purple cloth. On that cloth will be placed the utensils used at the altar, including the fire pans, the meat forks, the shovels, and the sprinkling bowls. All of this will then be covered with a piece of fine leather before the carrying poles are put in place. When the camp is ready to be moved, the Kohathites will be responsible for carrying the sacred objects and the furnishings of the sacred tent. But Aaron and his sons must have already covered those things, so the Kohathites won't touch them and die. Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, will be in charge of the oil for the lamps, the sweet-smelling incense, the grain for the sacrifices, and the olive oil used for dedications and ordinations. Eleazar is responsible for seeing that the sacred tent, its furnishings, and the sacred objects are taken care of. The Kohathites must not go near or even look at the sacred objects until Aaron and his sons have covered those objects. If they do, their entire clan will be wiped out. So make sure that Aaron and his sons go into the tent with them and tell them what to carry. The duties of the Gershonite clans. The Lord said to Moses, "Find out how many men between the ages of 30 and 50 are in the 2 Levite clans of Gershon. Count only those who are able to work at the sacred tent. The Gershonites will be responsible for carrying the curtains of the sacred tent, its 2 outer coverings, the curtain for the entrance to the tent, the curtains hanging around the courtyard of the tent, and the curtain and ropes for the entrance to the courtyard. The Gershonites are to do whatever needs to be done to take care of these things, and they will carry them wherever Aaron and his sons tell them to. These are the duties of the Gershonites at the sacred tent, and Ithamar, son of Aaron, will make sure they do their work. The duties of the Merarite clans. The Lord said, Moses, find out how many men between 30 and 50 are in the 2 Levite clans of Merari, but count only those who are able to work at the sacred tent. The Merarites will be responsible for carrying the frames of the tent and its other pieces, including the bars, the posts, the stands, as well as the posts that support the courtyard, together with their stands, tent pegs, and ropes. The Merarites are to be told exactly what objects they are to carry, and Ithamar, son of Aaron, will make sure they do their work. The Levites are counted again. Moses, Aaron, and the other Israelite leaders obeyed the Lord and counted the Levite tribe by families and clans to find out how many men there were between the ages of 30 and 50 who could work at the sacred tent. There were 2,750 Kohathites, 2,630 Gershonites, and 3,200 Merarites, making a total of 8,580. Then they were all assigned their duties. People are sent outside the camp. Chapter 5. The Lord told Moses to say to the people of Israel, "Put out of the camp everyone who has leprosy or a bodily discharge or who has touched a dead body. Now that I live among my people, their camp must be kept clean." The Israelites obeyed the Lord's instructions. The penalty for committing a crime. The Lord told Moses to say to the community of Israel, "If any of you commit a crime against someone, you have sinned against me. You must confess your guilt and pay the victim in full for whatever damage has been done, plus a fine of 20%. If the victim has no relative who can accept this money, it belongs to me and will be paid to the priest. In addition to that payment, you must take a ram for the priest to sacrifice, so your sin will be forgiven. When you make a donation to the sacred tent, that money belongs only to the priest, and each priest will keep what is given to him." A suspicious husband. The Lord told Moses to say to the people of Israel, "Suppose a man becomes jealous and suspects that his wife has been unfaithful, but he has no proof. He must take his wife to the priest, together with 2 pounds of ground barley as an offering to find out if she is guilty. No olive oil or incense is to be put on that offering. The priest is to have the woman stand at my altar, where he will pour sacred water into a clay jar and stir in some dust from the floor of the sacred tent. Next, he will remove her veil, then hand her the barley offering, and say, 'If you have been faithful to your husband, this water won't harm you. But if you have been unfaithful, it will bring down the Lord's curse. You will never be able to give birth to a child, and everyone will curse your name.' Then the woman will answer, "If I am guilty, let it happen just as you say." The priest will write these curses on special paper and wash them off into the bitter water, so that when the woman drinks this water, the curses will enter her body. He will take the barley offering from her and lift it up in dedication to me, the Lord. Then he will place it on my altar and burn part of it as a sacrifice. After that, the woman must drink the bitter water. If the woman has been unfaithful, the water will immediately make her unable to have children, and she will be a curse among her people. But if she is innocent, her body will not be harmed, and she will still be able to have children. This is the ceremony that must take place at my altar when a husband suspects that his wife has been unfaithful. The priest must have the woman stand in my presence and carefully follow these instructions. If the husband is wrong, he will not be punished. But if his wife is guilty, she will be punished. Rules for Nazarites. Chapter 6. The Lord told Moses to say to the people of Israel, "If any of you want to dedicate yourself to me by vowing to become a Nazarite, you must no longer drink any wine or beer or use any kind of vinegar. Don't drink grape juice or eat grapes or raisins, not even the seeds or skins. Even the hair of a Nazarite is sacred to me, and as long as you are a Nazarite, you must never cut your hair. During the time that you are a Nazarite, you must never go close to a dead body, not even that of your father, mother, brother, or sister. That would make you unclean. Your hair is the sign that you are dedicated to me, so remain holy. If someone suddenly dies near you, your hair is no longer sacred, and you must shave it 7 days later, during the ceremony to make you clean. Then, on the next day, bring two doves or two pigeons to the priest at the sacred tent. He will offer one of the birds as a sacrifice for sin, and the other as a sacrifice to please me. You will then be forgiven for being too near a dead body, and your hair will again become sacred. But the dead body made you unacceptable, so you must make another vow to become a Nazarite and be dedicated once more. Finally, a year-old ram must be offered as the sacrifice to make things right. When you have completed your promised time of being a Nazarite, go to the sacred tent and offer three animals that have nothing wrong with them. A year-old ram as a sacrifice to please me, a year-old female lamb as a sacrifice for sin, and a full-grown ram as a sacrifice to ask my blessing. Wine offerings and grain sacrifices must also be brought with these animals. Finally, you are to bring a basket of bread made with your finest flour and olive oil, but without yeast. Also bring some thin wafers brushed with oil. The priest will take these gifts to my altar and offer them, so that I will be pleased and will forgive you. Then he will sacrifice the ram and offer the wine, grain, and bread. After that, you will stand at the entrance to the sacred tent, shave your head, and put the hair in the fire where the priest has offered the sacrifice to ask my blessing. Once the meat from the ram's shoulder has been boiled, the priest will take it, along with one loaf of bread and one wafer brushed with oil, and give them to you. You will hand them back to the priest, who will lift them up in dedication to me. Then he can eat the meat from the ram's shoulder, its choice ribs, and its hind leg, because this is his share of the sacrifice. After this, you will no longer be a Nazarite, and will be free to drink wine. These are the requirements for Nazarites. However, if you can afford to offer more, you must do so. The blessing for the people. The Lord told Moses, "When Aaron and his sons bless the people of Israel, they must say, I pray that the Lord will bless and protect you, and that he will show you mercy and kindness. May the Lord be good to you and give you peace. Then the Lord said, If Aaron and his sons ask me to bless the Israelites, I will give them my blessing. The leaders bring gifts to the sacred tent. Chapter 7. When Moses had finished setting up the sacred tent, he dedicated it to the Lord, together with its furnishings, the altar, and its equipment. Then the 12 tribal leaders of Israel, the same men who had been in charge of counting the people, came to the tent with gifts for the Lord. They brought 6 strong carts and 12 oxen, 1 ox from each leader, and a cart from every 2. The Lord said to Moses, Accept these gifts, so the Levites can use them here at the sacred tent for carrying the sacred things. Then Moses took the carts and oxen and gave them to the Levites, who were under the leadership of Ithamar, son of Aaron. Moses gave 2 carts and 4 oxen to the Gershonites for their work, and 4 carts and 8 oxen to the Merarites for their work. But Moses did not give any to the Kohathites, because they were in charge of the sacred objects that had to be carried on their shoulders. On the day the altar was dedicated, the 12 leaders brought offerings for its dedication. The Lord said to Moses, Each day, 1 leader is to give his offering for the dedication. So each leader brought the following gifts: a silver bowl that weighed over 3 pounds, and a silver sprinkling bowl weighing almost 2 pounds, both of them filled with flour and olive oil as grain sacrifices, and weighed according to the official standards. A small gold dish filled with incense. A young bull, a full-grown ram, and a year-old ram as sacrifices to please the Lord. A goat as a sacrifice for sin. And 2 bulls, 5 full-grown rams, 5 goats, and 5 rams a year old as sacrifices to ask the Lord's blessing. The tribal leaders brought their gifts and offerings in the following order. On the first day, Nahshon from Judah. On the second day, Nathanael from Issachar. On the third day, Eliab from Zebulun. On the fourth day, Eliezer from Reuben. On the fifth day, Shelumiel from Simeon. On the sixth day, Eliasaph from Gad. On the seventh day, Elishama from Ephraim. On the eighth day, Gamaliel from Manasseh. On the ninth day, Abidan from Benjamin. On the tenth day, Ahiezer from Dan. On the 11th day, Pagiel from Asher. On the 12th day, Ahira from Naphtali. And so, when the altar was dedicated to the Lord, these 12 leaders brought the following gifts: 12 silver bowls and 12 silver sprinkling bowls, weighing a total of about 60 pounds, according to the official standards; 12 gold dishes filled with incense and weighing about 3 pounds; 12 bulls, 12 full-grown rams, and 12 rams a year old as sacrifices to please the Lord, along with the proper grain sacrifices; 12 goats as sacrifices for sin; and 24 bulls, 60 full-grown rams, 60 goats, and 60 rams a year old as sacrifices to ask the Lord's blessing. Whenever Moses needed to talk with the Lord, he went into the sacred tent, where he heard the Lord's voice coming from between the 2 winged creatures above the lid of the sacred chest. Aaron puts the gold lamps in place. Chapter 8. The Lord said to Moses, Tell Aaron to put the 7 lamps on the lampstand so they shine toward the front." Aaron obeyed and placed the lamps as he was told. The lampstand was made of hammered gold from its base to the decorative flowers on top, exactly like the pattern the Lord had described to Moses. Instructions for ordaining the Levites. The Lord said to Moses, "The Levites must be acceptable to me before they begin working at the sacred tent. So separate them from the rest of the Israelites, and sprinkle them with the water that washes away their sins. Then have them shave their entire bodies and wash their clothes. They are to bring a bull and its proper grain sacrifice of flour mixed with olive oil. And they must bring a second bull as a sacrifice for sin. Then you, Moses, will call together all the people of Israel and have the Levites go to my sacred tent, where the people will place their hands on them. Aaron will present the Levites to me as a gift from the people, so that the Levites will do my work. After this, the Levites are to place their hands on the heads of the bulls. Then one of the bulls will be sacrificed for the forgiveness of sin, and the other to make sure that I am pleased. The Levites will stand at my altar in front of Aaron and his sons, who will then dedicate the Levites to me. This ceremony will show that the Levites are different from the other Israelites and belong to me in a special way. After they have been made acceptable and have been dedicated, they will be allowed to work at my sacred tent. They are mine, and will take the place of the firstborn Israelite sons. When I killed the oldest sons of the Egyptians, I decided that the firstborn sons in each Israelite family would be mine, as well as every firstborn male from their flocks and herds. But now I have chosen these Levites as substitutes for the firstborn sons, and I have given them as gifts to Aaron and his sons to serve at the sacred tent. I will hold them responsible for what happens to anyone who gets too close to the sacred tent." The Levites are dedicated to the Lord. Moses, Aaron, and the other Israelites made sure that the Levites did everything the Lord had commanded. The Levites sprinkled themselves with the water of forgiveness and washed their clothes. Then Aaron brought them to the altar and offered sacrifices to forgive their sins and make them acceptable to the Lord. After this, the Levites worked at the sacred tent as assistants to Aaron and his sons, just as the Lord had commanded. The Lord also told Moses, "Levites who are between the ages of 25 and 50 can work at my sacred tent, but once they turn 50, they must retire. They may help the other Levites in their duties, but they must no longer be responsible for any work themselves. Remember this when you assign their duties." Regulations for Celebrating Passover. Chapter 9. During the first month of Israel's second year in the Sinai Desert, the Lord had told Moses to say to the people, "Celebrate Passover in the evening of the 14th day of this month, and do it by following all the regulations." Moses told the people what the Lord had said, and they celebrated Passover there in the desert in the evening of the 14th day of the first month. Some people in Israel's camp had touched a dead body and had become unfit to worship the Lord, and they could not celebrate Passover. But they asked Moses and Aaron, "Even though we have touched a dead body, why can't we celebrate Passover and offer sacrifices to the Lord at the same time as everyone else?" Moses said, "Wait here while I go into the sacred tent and find out what the Lord says about this." The Lord then told Moses to say to the community of Israel, "If any of you or your descendants touch a dead body and become unfit to worship me, or if you are away on a long journey, you may still celebrate Passover, but it must be done in the second month in the evening of the 14th day. Eat the Passover lamb with thin bread and bitter herbs, and don't leave any of it until morning, or break any of the animal's bones. Be sure to follow these regulations. But if any of you refuse to celebrate Passover when you are not away on a journey, you will no longer belong to my people. You will be punished because you did not offer sacrifices to me at the proper time. Anyone, including foreigners who live among you, can celebrate Passover if they follow all the regulations. The cloud over the sacred tent. As soon as the sacred tent was set up, a thick cloud appeared and covered it. The cloud was there each day, and during the night a fire could be seen in it. The Lord used this cloud to tell the Israelites when to move their camp and where to set it up again. As long as the cloud covered the tent, the Israelites did not break camp. But when the cloud moved, they followed it, and wherever it stopped, they camped and stayed there, whether it was only one night, a few days, a month, or even a year. As long as the cloud remained over the tent, the Israelites stayed where they were. But when the cloud moved, so did the Israelites. They obeyed the Lord's commands and went wherever he directed Moses. The Silver Trumpets. Chapter 10. The Lord told Moses, "Have someone make two trumpets out of hammered silver. These will be used to call the people together and to give the signal for moving your camp. If both trumpets are blown, everyone is to meet with you at the entrance to the sacred tent. But if just one is blown, only the 12 tribal leaders need to come together. Give a signal on a trumpet when it is time to break camp. The first blast will be the signal for the tribes camped on the east side, and the second blast will be the signal for those on the south. But when you